I'd like to begin by acknowledging and celebrating the first Australians on whose traditional lands we meet, and pay our respects to the elders of the Gadigal people, past and present. My name is Jonathan Pryke. I'm a research fellow in the Melanesia program here at the Lowy Institute. My job today is to say as little as possible before I pass over to our panel. I just do have a quick few thanks to make and acknowledgements. The first is to acknowledge our partners in this event, Family PNG and the Development Policy Centre at the ANU, for helping bring together such a stellar panel to speak today. I'd also like to acknowledge the funding support from the Department of Foreign Affairs that has made this all happen. They support both the AusPNG network and the Lowy Institute, but also Family PNG and the Development Policy Centre. So the ongoing support in this space, particularly in gender, is exemplary, and we acknowledge that funding. I also want to just acknowledge the great range of speakers we have on the panel today. I'll leave it to Kath to introduce them in a second. And I'd also finally like to thank my colleague Anna Kirk for actually getting the speakers into the room today. So thanks very much, Anna. It wasn't easy. And finally, I'd just like to acknowledge and introduce our chair today, Kath Taplin. Kath is a lawyer by training and has had experience in both private and community legal practice before becoming a senior development practitioner in both AusAid and DFAT, which included a posting to Papua New Guinea. Kath currently works as the Senior Development Manager for Family PNG, and often when you partner with people on events, it can become a real headache, but Kath, it's been a real pleasure working with you at this event. And so on that note, I'll hand it over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Jenna. Thank you kindly. Welcome, everybody. It's wonderful to see this turn out, something that is really very, very important. I'd like to thank Lowy International for putting on this important event. Lowy are great partners to the Development Policy Centre and indeed now to Family PNG. So without further ado, we're very privileged to have this panel of leaders here with us today from government, from non-government organisation, from the private sector, and from a development organisation. Each of these sectors has a very, very important perspective to lend to addressing violence against women in Papua New Guinea. We're here to talk with this panel of leaders about new approaches, about ways forward. Anyone who is passionate about our region and its people has heard much about violence against women and children, not just in PNG, but in fact in all countries, including in Australia. We are joined in this mission to address this scourge. Today we're here to talk about Papua New Guinea, and I hope that the conversation that we have today can be injected very much with not just what's wrong, but what works and why. From this, people, organisations and movements can be better informed and educated about what the next steps might be. So we have here with us today Secretary Anna Solomon. I'm very proud to be sitting next to you, Secretary.
Thank you.
A long-term senior experienced bureaucrat heading the National Department for Community Development, which has a very broad mandate covering, importantly for today, women, children, social protection, people with disabilities, and much, much more. We have Denga Elave, a wonderful woman and colleague of mine, operations manager, senior role in the organisation Family PNG, an NGO operating in Lae at the front line, assisting survivors of family and sexual violence. We have Kevin Byrne, vice chair of PNG's Business Coalition for Women, ex-mayor of Cairns, ex-serviceman, and a gentleman we're proud to have with us as the head of a range of organisations and authorities, and who has a long history in Papua New Guinea.
Thank you.
We have Kimberly Kapore, the wonderful CEO of Oil Search Foundation, a lawyer and someone with extensive private sector experience internationally. Can we please welcome these wonderful panellists today? So I thought we'd start by each of the panellists introducing themselves and what they're doing and how it's relevant to violence against women and addressing that in Papua New Guinea today.
Thank you, Kat. And now I have to be very careful. It's cold here and I've been coughing and it's really loud in the room, so you've got to excuse me when I do that. But good afternoon, everybody. I'm friends of PNG and I see that there's a number of Papua New Guineans here. Good blavin and loyupla. Thank you to the Lowy Institute for the invitation. From the government, I look after the Department for Community Development. Unlike here, perhaps, where you have a Minister for Women and probably for Children, we still have all that under the department. So we have one minister in Parliament who talks on a number of issues. It's a bit challenging for us, but on the other side, it's helped us look at family as a whole as compared to individuals. So from the department, we look after women, children, and disability. Youth used to be under us. The louder they got, they have now become an authority. So with women, children, and youth, when we talk gender-based violence and gender equality, especially on having new approaches to addressing gender-based violence, we are not just talking women, we are also talking children, we are also talking our people with disability. We've come from a journey where we've learned so much from our international partners, but we got to understand Papua New Guinea and the context of our country and what our strengths are in Papua New Guinea. And that's where we are reviewing a lot of our legislations, our policies, our strategies, and our sectoral approaches, because we want to make sure that we strengthen this, our NGOs and our private sector. So we are all moving together. So that's where we are at, especially in the last 3 years. That's the focus we've focused on. And we've also recognized churches as a big partner in Papua New Guinea. If you've been to Papua New Guinea, and if you talk to Papua New Guinean friends and you ask them what village they come from, even if you don't see a school or an aid post, you will find a church. And that's their next. If they can't find safety within their own family, that's the next stop. They run to the churches. So we want to recognize that strength that's been there even before we had any social protection laws or policies. So that's been our safety net for a long time. How do we now enhance that, as well as the international best practices that we are bringing in? How do we put that together?
Certainly, Secretary, and churches have been service providers that have countrywide reach,
yes.
Definitely. Dengan, can you talk to us a bit about your work and its relevance to addressing violence against women?
Thank you, Kat. I'll be speaking from the NGO perspective and as a frontline implementer. And so basically, Family PNG is a new organization that's started its operation in 2014 June. But we bring in experiences from a wide range of organizations, and those who have worked, I recognize those partners who have worked before. And so identifying the gap in the service provision, we are now working and delivering service to survivors of family and sexual violence. And we see that the model that we are working and delivering service is really working well. And so basically we're working in partnership with the government sectors, like the police, the hospital, and the police welfare, the courts, in ensuring that women who report, women and children, including men, who report cases of family sexual violence, help, they get the support that they need to ensure that they really access the services that they need. So basically, that's what Family PNG is doing. And there are practical support that we give to ensure that support is made available to them. So you will, from research and information that you read in the media, that there is high number of illiteracy level in Papua New Guinea amongst women. So our caseworkers help women to write up their statements when they recognize that they are illiterate, and we even assist them to the point of getting them to report cases to the police and to the welfare, so that because there are so many barriers that have been identified in survivors accessing the services. So for a caseworker, one of our caseworkers to go with them provides that empowerment to this particular survivor to help them really access services. And if there are challenges that we encounter in the process of getting that help that is needed, we call case conferencing, and I think it's part of our culture. It's a communal society that when there is a problem, we come together, share ideas together, help each other. We live in extended families. So capitalizing on that part of our culture, we bring in the stakeholders together, discuss how we can work together on that particular challenging case and discuss recommendations and delegate responsibilities accordingly with each partner and find solution for, you know, women and children who are undergoing those issues. So those are the approaches that we are taking.
Excellent. So I think I just want to mention it's a great privilege to have Denga here today. So Denga is a frontline worker in Lae, a very beautiful place, but it has a lot of challenges, and I'm really hoping the audience learns a lot from Denga today. It's a real privilege to have you here from your work there. Kevin.
Well, I was born in Lae, actually, so I have a great affinity for Lae and obviously the work that Denga does. Very briefly, the Business Coalition for Women is a little over 2 years old now. We're formed by a collaboration between the Australian New Zealand government and also the International Finance Corporation. Amy Neustra is a representative of IFC who's here in the audience. So we're particularly grateful for that support. What do? We're at the other end of the spectrum from the organisation Family PNG. Where our role basically is to educate business and provide advice and leadership to businesses in gender smart policies, in leadership, and the creation of an awareness in Papua New Guinea of the impact of social violence, violence against women, violence against children, but it is social violence generally that could be termed the issue, and to try and educate our business places about respect and bringing a new dimension to the way women are treated in the workforce and the role that women play in the workforce. It's about trying to inculcate in the businesses of Papua New Guinea and the overall community a leadership role in the equality argument and the respect argument that deals with gender inequality and the issues of children in all its forms. And we try and meld that debate into a workplace context and provide workplaces and businesses and so on with the tools that they can bring policy into their workplaces about the right things to do and the equality generally. So that's where we're coming from. It's early days. We're developing our programs. We've got some wonderful initiatives, some of which are over on the table over there. And I'm happy to talk about some of those as we go forward. One of the exciting ones at the moment is leadership for women in the community and business leadership. And this is a new area for us to get involved in as the education sector. And it's all about tying in what business does overall in Papua New Guinea with government policies and with the other NGOs and the services they provide. So I'm particularly happy to be here to represent our organisation. And I extend apologies from our chairperson, Lesalea Taveri, who is away at the moment overseas, so she couldn't be here, and extends her apologies. So great privilege to be here, and thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, I think it's wonderful you're here, Kevin, not least because you're bringing some diversity to our panel, so thank you so much.
A bit of gender balance.
That too. Kimberly.
Yeah, thanks, Kath. I'll just be really brief.
Not too brief.
A lot to get through. Hello, everybody. My name's Kimberly, and I'm the relatively recent new CEO of the Oil Search Foundation, and we're a developmental organisation principally committed to delivering services throughout Papua New Guinea. We were founded in 2012 as the Oil Search Health Foundation, and we are principally funded by Oil Search Limited, which is the largest company in Papua New Guinea and the largest employer in Papua New Guinea, so the reach of the company is far and wide. And in 2015, the Oil Search Foundation was rebranded and is now the Oil Search Health Foundation has now become the Oil Search Foundation because we've expanded from health services principally into the areas of women's protection and empowerment and also leadership and education. And it's not that those are vertical streams. We're taking a very much a horizontal approach that health, women's protection and empowerment and leadership and education are symbiotic in lots of ways. consider ourselves to be one of the largest and most important developmental partners to the government of Papua New Guinea. Nothing that we do happens without first taking our cue from and conferring with and coordinating in every way possible with the government and all of these things. We're not social experts and we don't pretend to be, so we rely heavily on partnerships, developing those and strengthening our partners to be able to work with us and use our comparative advantage, of which there are many, as a very large business with all of the advantages that come to you as an organization with those kinds of resources, to be able to take those services as far as we can. And in the area specifically of women's protection and empowerment, we feel extremely privileged to be part of this groundswell. And I think that we're probably one of the very first sort of private sector organizations that's really publicly and with money behind the mandate has said that social success is critical to business success, and that comes from the managing director of Oil Search Limited. And it's true every step of the way in how we feel as a foundation. So we have a lot of areas in which we're developing our approach to women's protection and empowerment internally with partners and on a national level.
I want to just take the moment to recognise the PNG Consul General who's joined us. Thank you very much. So to lift it up a bit and to get the panel talking now, do you think, would you say, and how would you say, there's a growing awareness of violence against women and children, and it is an issue that needs to be addressed, and that's a broad growing awareness, and how would you describe it? Because PNG, it's very hard to talk quite generally, but I want you to have a go.
Thank you, Kat. You know, we've come from, our journey is very unique, and in, you know, just like every other country in the world that's had their journey in terms of gender equality and addressing gender-based violence, PNG is no different, except that we know our strengths, and our strength has been our family units in the village or clan or tribe. We've never had to have safety homes or orphanage where we place our orphans, or disabled homes where we place our disabled children, because that family has been that safety net. When we had a couple, you know, tragically die, the child was automatically taken by a brother or a sister, and it was not seen as a burden, you know. So that's been our strength. We've come now to a time where, you know, our economy has grown, modern technology has come in. How do we now try to balance some of these things we are seeing coming on media and to do with socio-related matters and gender-based violence and child abuse? And how do you talk to a country where the majority, 80%, is in the villages? How do you speak to them about gender equality, addressing gender-based violence? How do we tell them that discipline, corporal punishment, is child abuse? How do you tell them that? Now that's where we are seeing that we need to strike that balance. We need to find that balance. We are getting a lot of assistance, but we need to see what fits Papua New Guinea well. And so we've looked at many of our laws and policies and legislations, many of which were very colonial, many of which were reviewed, but still not fitting to the context of PNG. Yeah. And so having to look at all these family laws, having to review them, having to include the strengths of PNG in terms of placement of abused women or abused children, first stop call, second call, is where the government has come in strengthening its laws and its policies. And but we also recognize that areas where we have not reached, our churches have been there. Services that we have not provided, our NGOs have been there. Areas, the private sector has done so much in their area as well. So how do we as government recognize those, acknowledge those, but put that together in a country like PNG where you need to do that through laws and do that through policies? It's not highly regulated like here, where you can talk and people will follow. You need to put them in laws, you need to put them into community languages where they understand, and you need to have that comfort that laws we'll slowly change attitudes, but have a lot of awareness working with our partners to ensure that this message is carried across. The challenge is breaking those social norms, those acceptance of violence against women, those acceptance of child punishments with the rod. You know, we must break those social norms through the aggressive awareness that we do together as partners.
Thank you, Secretary. So I'm hearing that you think that government, there's change at that top level. That's what I'm hearing,
yes.
I think. And indeed, we've seen Prime Minister O'Neill come out quite directly on it. And we know that there's family protection laws and child protection laws, and you've been quite vocal about some of these. So we're seeing that awareness. What would you say, Denga? I mean, your perspective is going to be very different, Secretary alluded to, more rurally, more remotely. What would you say about whether there's an awareness of the need to address it?
Thank you, Kat. I think in the last 2 years, there have been a lot of emerging partners, emerging organizations, community-based, faith-based, in trying to raise awareness against, and what result do we have to show that there is a growing awareness there. So recently, we have a lot of women reporting cases of family sexual violence. So women are able to recognize that, you know, this is not acceptable. And so increasing number of women and children, and of course men, are reporting to the service providers that they are undergoing these issues. And so that is a manifestation of growing awareness out there in the communities. Or even when a woman come out to seek from a remote village, come out to seek the service, and finds that there are services available for this, you know, these issues, then she goes back and spread the information further to those who are unable to get the information through other forms of media. So information has been replicated through those who are accessing the services, and even from like a strong partner like the church and even government. And a lot of awareness is happening in schools and in the communities, and even through media. We have MTV now that is also showing every Wednesday, raising awareness. And yeah, so there is growing awareness in this issue, like unlike in the before, like 2 years ago, I would never hear all those, you know, awareness programs that are happening to help people recognize that this is not acceptable behavior in the society, in the community. So there is growing awareness, and with the perception that people have about violence is gradually changing, that it's not accepted in our communities and in our society.
Thank you. I want to hear from the people with extensive business leadership experience, because it's very important that something happens at the big end of town. I want to hear why, what is happening and why.
Okay, I'll kick off. Look, there is growing understanding that violence is not acceptable in any of its forms, but particularly in business, there is this awareness now about world's best practice, and I pick up on the point that Anna mentioned about the strength of the family unit in PNG. There is another area there that we can explore later on, the One Talk system that exists in PNG that goes, you know, is involved with that. But as we develop professional businesses, and as we're more linked to the world with computers, as Papua New Guineans are every day, more and more computers in the workplace, there is this awareness that women need equality to progress. Women need safe workplaces. There is a real issue about management accepting responsibility in PNG that they are getting now, that we have to provide safe workplaces for women. That's a legal responsibility. And so as we develop that understanding in the business community, equally there are women and men in those workplaces saying, you've got a responsibility now to provide safe workplaces. So step up to the mark and provide it. And that is happening in the business fraternity in Papua New Guinea. And I think it's a pleasing response. But it's only in the last couple of years, because there is, as the world becomes internationalised, and this is something Papua New Guinea cannot escape, there is an issue about accepting responsibility for social behaviour in the workplace, and that's a very pleasing response. And the Business Coalition for Women is very proud to be involved in articulating that debate and what it means. So yes, there is. And dare I say it, these things are wonderful tools because they've linked Papua New Guineans. We've got wonderful telecommunications throughout Papua New Guinea for a country our size, and with the economy that we have. So there's more and more awareness happening through these things and computers, and that's a very positive sign.
Thanks, Emily. I just sort of wanted to discuss two things. The first being sort of historical context. It's not like society was always this troubled in this way. That's my perspective, by the way. And it's really, from my view, there's been a huge amount of social upheaval since independence, essentially. And what that's been twinned with is the degradation of the traditional norms, which varied from place to place, even in the same, you know, valley. You've got five different language groups. You've got five different ways of dealing with, completely different ways of dealing with the same situation. And with breakdown of those structures, the increase of a lack of capacity to deal with, and especially from the male side of things, belonging to a place, the sense of place and sense of ownership, and the hierarchy, because you move, you've got this urbanization. So a lot of different things are happening at the same time, and the ability of the society to, or our society to, develop new ways of coping with new issues hadn't caught up, you know, just as fast as things are changing. And things are changing in PNG just as fast as anywhere else in the world that I've had the privilege to live and work. So in that vein, this has to be seen sort of as part of quite a recent massive social upheaval that's happening, and coupled with a massive growth in population, massive set of urbanization, and you're just going to have social problems like this. What's different now is that 10 years ago, from the private sector context, everybody's always recognized that it's a cost to business when your workforce can't turn up for whatever reason, and you don't know how long it'll be till they'll come back, and maybe you'll have to, you know, compensate in lots of different ways. And so people were sort of dealing with those issues individually, and it really depended on who the boss was, who the employer was in the particular situation, and all of that kind of thing. I think what has happened very recently is that now business is really looking at tools and the business approach to dealing with this issue, and acknowledging that if the social welfare of the people that work with us and work for us is good, then the business benefits, or can only benefit in that way. And also, I mean, it all goes towards being a good corporate citizen. So I'm extremely encouraged by the incredible positivity that I see. And really what, for me, it comes down to anyways, this is taking up ownership of the issue. Before, it was really somebody else's problem, and that's for lots of reasons. If it's not your business, you don't make it your business.
Do you mean within family units or communities? Or
just
do you mean
anywhere, just, if you're walking down the street and somebody was having at it with somebody else, you know, turned around.
Right.
And it was just very acknowledged that you just did not interfere. And I think that's because, for lots of reasons, we talked about it yesterday, in Melanesian culture, you know, you don't interfere.
Right.
There existed structures for people to resolve conflict, and they were very ritualized and formalized in a lot of ways, and they worked. And they don't work anymore. And that has to be acknowledged. And the issue of compensation and compensating away of violence is a very big one that we need to, you know, sort of as a society address, but that's a whole different sort of panel discussion.
I'm just going to keep going, I'm going to get your views on that, Kevin, because you were nodding then, but keep going.
Yeah, no, I'll just be brief. But from the private sector perspective, we were in Cairns just earlier this week, I think most of us, maybe not you, Anna, and it was a really moving moment on the second day. Well, first of all, for the Australia PNG Business Council to twin discussions around the economic crisis that the country is in the precipice of, and with questions around social welfare of women, was amazing. It's a really powerful statement that they were making. And for business leaders to get up at the end of the conference and say, I commit to being a leader for men in this, in answering this issue, was a really powerful statement. Mm-hmm. And if that can happen in a place that nobody ever expected it to happen, not only because of, you know, the culture that we come from, but also because of the nature of business people being focused on, you know, economic issues rather than social issues, then that's a great signal. Mm-hmm. So it's a positive step forward. I think it's still early days. We're definitely focused on being a leader and a partner in this area and developing those tools and delivering them in-house. One of the big things I always say about business is that, and especially for a company like Oil Search and a foundation like Oil Search Foundation, is that we have this amazing captive audience, which is all of our employees, who are highly educated people. In PNG, unfortunately, the highly educated are a very small percentage of the population. And that necessarily makes them leaders, because one person will feed many people in lots of different ways, not just with money, but with thoughts and ideas and that sort of thing. We've shown that it works with sharing health initiatives with your workforce. It has to work with addressing issues of GBV and family and sexual violence, and we really believe that. So we'll start close to home. That's where we're starting now, and reach out from there.
Mm. I was at that Cairns forum, and a number of people mentioned they thought there was a distinct change, and in fact were quite shocked at the emphasis put on the issue in a very pleased way. So one of the things you talked about there was recession. One of the things that happens when there's less money is people end up fighting for scraps. Secretary, do you think, inevitably, economies go up and down, do you think there's a risk that the momentum we're seeing around laws, regulations, implementing bodies and strategies, is there a chance that gender and efforts to address violence against women by government will be neglected? Do you see that as a risk, or do you think you can go strongly forward and the strategy for prevention of violence against women will be strengthened, it'll be passed and implemented?
Well, let me answer it this way. With the laws and policies and strategies that we come up with, we recognize all the different players, you know, all the different partners. If we are focused just on government, then we're missing out all the partners and the resources they bring into our country to help us address some of these issues. So the way we're working on our laws and policies are now also recognizing all the partners and the donor partners too with the developmental cooperation policy. Mm-hmm. So we recognize that a system that also comes in. So together we are looking at how addressing GBV will be addressed. But in PNG, we're just not looking at directly addressing gender-based violence. What are other areas the government is focused on to address gender-based violence? So we're also focusing on women economic empowerment through our small and medium enterprise policy and also our informal economy policy. We're also looking at women in leadership positions. Mm. We've got a good number of partners focused on trying to get more women into parliament, trying to get more women into our provincial assemblies. How do we get them to understand that this is the role they play? How do we get them to, before they go in, that this is the reality? If you're trying to go in with 5,000, where would you spend it? On your posters or on your campaign people or on you know, what do you want to spend it on? On food? And so you do a reality check, and some of them just want to put their hands up because they've been forced to stand by their people. So that gave us an indication of who wanted to continue and who wanted to take a step back and probably try in the next elections. But it's not only women in politics, it's also women in the bureaucratic office and also the private sector are doing their bit as well. And so we've got the JESSE policy, Gender Equality and Social Inclusion policy, and that is implemented by our Department of Personnel Management. Mm. And that has gone really well as well. We have a number of female heads. I mean, previously you won't see a female like me heading a government department. You probably wouldn't see a CEO of a foundation. He just said that the chairman of Business Coalition is not here. She's a female. And a Papua New Guinean female too. We've just had an all-female crew fly our airplane. Mm-hmm. And they flew our Prime Minister too. So those are all the achievements that we want to celebrate as well, because it's also addressing gender-based violence. And we've also had in the recent Pacific Games an old ladies rugby team. Our grandmothers would never have dreamt that we would play rugby. And we played rugby. And so with this kind of changes, how do we tell our rural population that this is gender equality and not get them to attack us that you are playing a boy's game, you are in a man's kind of role, so that they appreciate. So what I'm saying is the awareness is good, but what kind of awareness? How are we conveying these messages? Because if we are not careful and if we are conveying in the way others are pushing us to, they can go 10 steps back. You bring them one step forward, and this message can bring them back. And so that's my concern. That's our concern as government, okay. Because sometimes we can do that. But on the other side, we also have our focus on a more proactive approach in terms of women and education. Mm. So with the free education, there's now an increase in the number of girls going to school. What we find now, after a bit of research, is, and we still yet to complete that research, is retaining girls in school. Mm. It's not about girls getting enrolled in school now, it's retaining them. What are the issues? Why are they not staying on and completing their education? So that's a study that our National Research Institute is doing, and I would really encourage partners who want to do research in country to come and work with our National Research Institute. You will not have to start all over again. There are many existing research that has been done. Some are lying around for nothing. You can use that and, you know, just update. And so they've done that research. We also have women and health. That's a big issue for PNG. Some curable diseases that are killing our women. And so from the department, we have an annual women's forum. With the help of the U.S. Embassy, we fly in women from the national, province, district as well, and girls and boys from our school. And we try to bring in a lot of male. Like, I would have been happy if this room was filled with male. Because in PNG, that's who we need to talk to. That's who we need to talk to. Who are the male champions? Let's identify them. Who are the male champions in our villages? Let's identify them. When I talk in my village, where I come from, men will not listen. I have to do it properly. I can turn them away. So I gotta do it properly. If I know that it's not a kind of community yet that will accept information, awareness from a woman, I gotta educate my home first and get my husband or my children to do that awareness for me. And it will convince a lot more other men who are the perpetrators. Mm. So that's the kind of approach we're coming into. And we've got a good number of male advocacy programs. We've got the warrior culture. We've also got a lot of boys awareness in schools. Mm. We also, and I'd like to thank Australia for this, DFED, is the focus on rugby. Papua New Guinea love rugby. We would watch State of Origin, Hunters, even not at the national, but right to the village. They have a TV and they would watch rugby. How can we utilize that time, the interest in rugby, and show the awareness programs, show the male making the difference in their villages? That will have a lot more impact.
That's really good advice, yeah. Secretary, on a whole number of fronts. I mean, government has its work cut out for it, and I heard all the initiatives there and all the plans, and also your personal views, and that's really precious to us, so thank you for that. I want to pick up on the men and women and the approaches, and Kevin, you spoke a little about wantokism and addressing the issues around compensation. Can we ask the panel, when you're addressing violence against women, this issue, violence against women and children, what are the different approaches that you think, and this might be a personal perspective, Secretary's just taken us into that realm, about what will work? We're here to talk about what might work, what needs to be addressed. I might start with Kevin.
Yeah, thank you. Sometimes I have to pinch myself because being a male and a white male, although I've spent a lot of time in Papua New Guinea, I don't understand it the way my colleagues understand the issue here. So I'm very conscious of that. What I am also conscious of is the fact that nothing much appears to have changed. The Secretary is absolutely right about we do have women rugby teams, we do have all these things, but they're generally in the heavy population-based areas. I see this issue around Papua New Guinea. We're talking about equality now and opportunity. And I think that we really need to put some rubber on the road here to make sure we don't waste any time, because there are great examples throughout our communities of Papua New Guinea of gratuitous violence. And it comes from, and dare I say it, my interpretation of an entitlement culture that has developed in Papua New Guinea, particularly amongst male people. Because if you have a look at the running of provincial governments, and I've been in the public service in Papua New Guinea, and I see the dominance of particular groups of people in the public service and this entitlement that excludes women in very many areas. And I think it's up to the women folk to drive this issue, along with support of men. It's all very well to have people stand up at a conference and commit themselves to women. That is the visual part of it. But the true embodiment of it is the action plans that we're doing with the Business Coalition for Women, and the action plans that emanate from government, and the action plans that emanate from the Oil Search Foundation. And the success of those action plans means that this wonderful lady here has less work to do, right? If the action plans are faulty, the reality is that this lady has lots to do. So that's the challenge that Papua New Guinea has, this entitlement culture. And it goes also to the issue of one-talkism. One-talkism, when I grew up in Papua New Guinea and my dad grew up there, was a community safety net. It's morphed into, if with due respect, it doesn't happen in your department, Secretary, but it's morphed into, if I'm in charge here, I'll look after all my one talks. And it's incredible how the one talks proliferate from this network. So you distribute largesse and you distribute money according to a system that was originally established to look after kin and family. It is now morphed into an organisation that looks after everybody. So I could go on and on about this. But so the challenge for us all sitting up here now is to make our commitments work on the ground and to forget about entitlement, forget about the one talk system, and be positive about that and make the system work.
Okay, thank you for your view, Kevin. I'm going to throw it open to the audience now. I mean, we've heard a lot of different views there. Not everyone's going to agree. Someone's going to find something interesting about an aspect of it. Do we have any questions?
I wonder if you can just talk us through...
Oh, sorry, can we have your name, where you're from?
Oh, sorry, I'm Muffy Potter, I'm from Put It Out There Pictures. I wonder if you can talk us through what services are available for women. What is the process when a violent incident happens at home? Where can they go?
Okay.
What is the process, you know, through the courts, etc.?
That's a brilliant question. What I'm going to do is ask my good colleague, Denga Ilave, to give us, if you're comfortable, a case study that talks about your service provision. It's a good example of the system working. That will illustrate it.
Thank you for that question. I'll just briefly take you through a case study that can demonstrate to you the service that is available for women. And basically, a woman would, after undergoing family sexual violence, would report to a police station or even at the medical center, like family support centers we have at the hospital. Now, once a woman report this case at the family support center, now I'll just tell you a case study. This woman was assaulted and she reported to police station with three of her children. And basically she had five children and her oldest child being 9 years old, and the youngest being a few months old. So at the time she reported to the police station, she reported with only three of her children, and she left two other children with the father, who is the perpetrator. So when she get reported to the police station, the police officer gave a call to our center, and so one of our caseworker responded and went there at the police station and found out that the children were very hungry. The whole four of them were really hungry, so she rushed over to a nearby shop, purchased some food for them, and the children ate food. And she recognized the caseworker from doing assessment, realized that one of the child was malnourished. So quickly did a referral to the hospital where the child was hospitalized for a few weeks, and found out that the hospital did not have in stock few medications. So we had to rush to a pharmacy to purchase some medication for this woman and children, especially the child. And so after they got discharged from the hospital, the woman told our caseworker that she wishes not to continue the relationship. The violence has been going on for the how many years she's been married, and she just had enough of the sexual violence and physical violence, all forms of violence that she went through. And so we referred her to emergency accommodation, where we provided other basic needs like food and transport and other support. And she was there when the caseworker did family tracing, and this woman said, I could relocate to this location where I feel much, much more safer. So our caseworker worked with her to have, I don't know what you call here, but interim protection order in place from the court that also offered her the custody of her children. And so basically our caseworker worked more closely with the police officer who initially referred the case to our center. And because of the involvement of the children as well, she worked directly with the welfare child protection officer and the hospital. And so that's basically the services available for women that you can see. And there are also other faith-based organizations and other partners who are providing other, you know, services like counseling and, a few other services.
But importantly, they're only in Lae, correct? Mm. Lae is one microcosm of Papua New Guinea.
Yeah, your point is that there are not enough of those services, but that's why why we're here. We're talking about what works.
And that will be growing demand, I think. Yeah.
Secretary wants to comment too.
I hear what David is saying in terms of the One Talk system, but I'm just trying to tie it in with what your question is and what the answer she gave. That is why when we looked at the Lookout in Pekinini Act, Lookout in Pekinini means look after our children. That is one of the family acts that we have, and it's focused on the protection of a child. Now, in that law, we tried to, of course, not everything in the One Talk system is good, but what is in that One Talk system that can be used as a safety home, as a safety net? As the first point that you pick out a child that's in immediate danger, you have one that may not be in immediate danger, but another that's in immediate danger, or a woman that's in immediate danger. Where is the next place that you quickly place them? Where there is still no safety home, where is still none of these services that are provided, and this is the rest of Papua New Guinea and the rural areas we are talking about. So in the law, we've recognized those families as the first stop, okay? When you, in extreme cases where you cannot place them with a family member because the abuse is right there in the family, then what is the next step? Which is why government is focusing a lot on our churches. Why I mentioned churches are in all over PNG. When partners come in, how can we strengthen our churches to be the safe homes? How can we strengthen our churches to be that second place where we can place our children in? And I say this because churches are all out there in Papua New Guinea. And they've already reached the most rural areas where we have not reached. So can that be our next stop?
Service delivery looks
where
like
we use as service delivery. Yeah. And so the family laws that we are looking at are trying to bring in some of our culture, our one-talk system, but not the bad practices, the good practices that we can use as those safety homes. Mm. When we build safe houses, who's going to take ownership of that later? That's our fear. If it's government, is it going to be sustained? I don't know. Maybe you're doing it very well in Australia. I don't know if that will be done well in PNG. Now, who can still look after those homes, still provide some of these services, so long as they're looked after by many of our partners, they'll still be existing. Mm-hmm. This is me from a government speaking. Yeah.
All right, another question, please.
Hi, Elaine Pearson from Human Rights Watch. I just had a question about the Family Protection Act, because I know this was passed in 2013, but I'm just curious when the regulations will actually be implemented. And secondly, also had a second question, I guess, about the budget that is devoted to your department to services for victims of family and sexual violence.
Okay, thank you for your question. With the regulations for the Family Protection Act, they're not out yet. The Department of Attorney General is taking a lead in that area. Whilst we are the department that's mandated to look after women, children and youth, when it comes to law, we refer it to the experts. And law reform, not law reform, the Department of Justice and Attorney General is working very hard to ensure it's out this year. In terms of budget, when we talk budget, we also, what I'm really comfortable about is the focus they've given on ensuring that the institutionalizing is available. I say this because we had a department and a structure that was not responsive to all the different issues that were arising. And we needed to position ourselves better. We needed positions that could quickly respond to child protection issues, women issues, disability issues when it came to gender-based violence. We were not positioned well. And in the last 3 years, we've made sure that all that restructuring took place. Our organic law did not really allow us to speak properly with the province and the district. Sometimes that was a hindrance for us, and I'm glad that was also reviewed by our Law Reform Commission. And so ensuring that the legal and enabling environment is clear, then that helps us to move forward. The government has put in a lot of funding, especially in the area of child protection. Through the law, they've also called for the office not to be clouded under my department anymore, but to be recognized as an office on its own. The process to that is having its own minister. We hope to do the same for women. We hope to do the same for our disability population. Mm-hmm. Now, when it comes to women, and I will say this, we've got so many thinkings to do with gender equality, but many of them were, I guess we didn't do it well. We didn't do it well. We were helped, but not done very well in the context of PNG. We signed up to CEDAW. We looked at the rights of women and how we could domesticate that into Papua New Guinea. We currently doing a CEDAW legislative review to look at all the discriminatory laws so that they're all speaking to each other and addressing areas where we really need to address. One big focus for government is to focus on mainstreaming. Mainstreaming meaning the department cannot do it alone. Every relevant government sector and other agencies have to take care of their own. I'm glad the private sector is doing that. We've got the Department of Personnel Management taking care of GSC, public sector women. We've got gender equality health policy. They're taking care of the women in health. We also have education with the GSC policy. And we've got the Electoral Commission as well. So we are focused on making sure that everybody takes care of the group in their sector, and that'll make our work a lot easier. And so the government now is working with Law Reform Commission to come up with that one gender equity law that defines probably a 5% or 10% budget to every government agency or every sector so that you are looking after your women. And I think that will make it a lot easier for us to help implement GBV and women economic or anything to do with gender equality.
I can hear you, Secretary, you're talking about taking it beyond one department, and yes, it's really impressive. I hear you. Another question, we diversify the questions as much as possible.
Hi, I'm Nigel Spence from Child Fund.
Yes, I remember you. we launched the hotline together.
We did, we launched the hotline.
Very good hotline.
This time last year, yeah. You touched on Australian aid just briefly a moment ago. I'm just thinking more broad. Could you comment more broadly about I mean, the Australian aid budget has been under terrible pressure and has been cut heavily here, as I think you know. You know, what role does that kind of external assistance play, or what, in your opinion, what should it play in addressing an issue like violence against women and children?
Now, can I do something? Just very quickly get a comment maybe from the business side on that and then come back to Anna on it. Aid.
Sorry, it was actually, well, at the foundation, we not just deliver signature programs, the ones I was talking about, health, women's education, leadership and empowerment, in the company, the Oil Search Limited's project areas, we also undertake grant management. This makes us one of only two oil companies in the world that have foundations that do what we do. And through our grant management program, we actually have a $500,000 US grant to develop 8 GBV responses and activities in PNG. So that puts us in a very unique front runner position in terms of working with the government to address some of these issues. So yeah, aid is critical. Okay. But right now, we don't have a specific partnership with DFAT on, or the Australian government, on the delivery of any particular programs in women's protection and empowerment, but that could, you know, obviously develop at any point in time.
Look, we don't have a comment on the allocation of aid. That's a matter between the recipient of Papua New Guinea and the delivery government, in this particular case, AusAid. So we don't have any comment on that. Mm. That's up to them.
I know the answer to this already. Mm. Is the contribution important to you, Denge Labo?
Yes. As a beneficiary, I must say yes, and thank you to the Australian government, because the project that Family PNG is running is a direct, you know, directly funded by DFAT under the Pacific Women Program. And so, yeah, it's really working well in that partnership. But what I can say here is that we have international expertise and advice from our members here, like from Australian National University, who gave us, but the project itself in Papua New Guinea, where the project is based in Lae, is run with my team. And that we have one expert staff who is working with us. The rest of the team members, total of 16 staff, 15 of us are national Papua New Guineans, with one expert staff on the ground, with the support from, you know, our international experts. So I see that, you know, the strength of our culture and what we have learned from other projects that have also implemented in the area of gender-based violence have, you know, been integrated into this center, Family PNG, and I see it really working. So the aid support that is very much appreciated from the beneficiary side, and also in terms of external international expertise in this area, together with what we have learned so far, is really working.
Can I just make an additional comment about that, because it is really important? I think because PNG is such a diverse country, one approach is not going to fit, you know, so many different places. So really, what can we do? We'll have to develop, you know, sort of unique responses to different and given situations and that sort of thing. And I think our partners, including DFAT and others abroad, understand and respect that. So when we refer to international expertise, I mean, there's a real shift and change in the way that the relationship is working, I perceive, between our government and development and aid partners, with development and aid partners, where they're coming and saying, what are you already doing? How can we support that? Is that working? What will be the value for money of investment in delivering in that context and that sort of thing? And that's really sort of where we're headed. I mean, if I can just briefly summarize, for us, you know, we're a business, so we want to, and a company that does a lot of work delivering services for a business, the organization, the foundation. So how can we be practical first? How can we address some of these social issues and build long-term sustainable behavioural change within the culture of our organisation and then in the areas that we reach? And really, we think there's four areas, and we sort of touched on all of them today, but I thought I'd summarise them really quickly because they're so critical to us, and they're the focus on how we look at investing the money that our donors, and the principal one of which is Oil Search Limited, give to us. The first one is really focusing on the strong voice and leadership of men. I mean, I think everybody acknowledges that for our cultural context, that's, you're not going to change Melanesian culture overnight, and that's fine. We don't want to do that anyway. What we want to do is learn to live in a successful country with realized gender equality in Papua New Guinea, where women can lead productive lives free of violence. That's the vision statement for the Women in Protection program for our foundation. And I think everybody here would agree that that's just a broader, wider vision that we would all want to live through. So how can we do that? And we have programs, and we're identifying local partners who are delivering local solutions for accessing men and giving them strong voice and leadership in their communities. That's one. The second one is supporting survivors' access to services is a really critical one. We have an excellent program ourselves. I'm not going to keep advertising us, but this is just to give you an example of the Family Support Center in Tyree Hospital. Again, we are not experts in delivering social services and counselling services, but there is definitely a huge need in PNG for greater quality and quantity of counselling services. So how can we leverage our relationships with aid development partners and local organisations so that you twin the approach to do that? And we had discussions in Canberra just yesterday afternoon about with DFAT working on just this thing, and I think that that's critical. The third thing is working with partners on case management and awareness, so exactly organisations like Family PNG. And the final thing, and I think this is, for me, it's the most important one, is empowering women and girls, and that you do that through education, and that is where we should be really sitting here with a member from the panel of the Department of Education. And financial literacy and just general literacy is things that we can do quickly and proactively to start to even or close in on the gap in that respect.
Excellent, thank you. And Secretary, the question was about aid and international assistance, and we can broaden that. Is it important to you and what you're doing to address violence against women?
Yes, thank you. And I mean, let me acknowledge Child Fund here. We launched the very important number in Papua New Guinea, first hotline ever. And we've had a lot more men calling in to that number since it was launched, which shows that, you know, there are men in Papua New Guinea. Men don't normally talk about these issues. They want help. Well, they're probably being abused too. I don't know. Some of my staff tell me that, male staff tell me that, Secretary, you're so busy talking about women and gender-based violence, and we are also getting abused at home. So is there anything for men? Yeah. So I'm really glad a lot of men have been calling, but not only asking about how they can get help, because they are, you know, doing this to their wives or their families. Yeah. So thank you, Child Fund. I'm glad to see you here. To do with the aid, let me firstly acknowledge DFAT. Of course, gender-based violence, or gender for that matter, is not a language that Papua New Guinea we understood. You know, we didn't understand what gender was. We got a lot of help from outside, from our partners, and DFAT is one of those major traditional partners in that area. So I'd like to acknowledge them first and thank DFAT for bringing us up this far. And we've now come to a point where we know what we want. We know that the journey we took was correct, but not really fully correct for Papua New Guinea. So we now know how we can help with government funds as well as development partners fund and really make it work for our Papua New Guinean families. And under the DFAT program, we have the 58 million, which is the Pacific Women Shaping Pacific Program. One of the products of that is Family PNG here. And so we'd like to see that, my advice would be, we must know where to focus our energy on. Sometimes we don't focus our energy in the right places. And my concern is the exit strategy. When it's a very good project, when it ends, there's no sustainability. There's no ownership by the country itself. And that's an area of concern. And how we can improve that is we start right from the beginning with the discussions on the design and how we can, you know, work together, who can address this, let the private sector do this, let the NGOs do this, let the government do this, and we'll get it right from the start.
Bring everyone together, collaborate, yes, and have it PNG-led. That's what I'm hearing, Secretary.
And I'm glad Family PNG, because that's a gap, you know, and it's those gaps. How can we best address the gaps in terms of service delivery? And Papua New Guinea is a country where, You really need that coordinated approach for things to work. You must. Over the years, we've had, and I like to use this story because we come from villages. Many of you sitting here will not know what a village really looks like, I think, but we come from villages. And to get to our village, when partners or other NGOs or government comes in, it's like you are paddling in different canoes to the same village. One comes and goes, the other one comes and goes, and we're not able to go in and assess the impact of the programs that have just come in and gone out. And so that coordinated approach, right at the national level, to the provincial level, to the district, and to the villages is sustainable, is what sustainability will be about as well. Otherwise, we won't leave a good exit strategy. And let me still continue on this, please, just two more minutes. with literacy programs, we have a lot of literacy programs. We have a lot of funding from partners. Sometimes there's an adult literacy program in this village. Just over the mountain, they need adult literacy program. But because we don't know, we cannot direct this one, please just cross, you just have to walk, you know, and then get to the next village. We don't know that, so another group comes in, and another group comes in, and we are not able to assess the impact that well. So the government has been very, very focused on our reforms to do with a coordinated approach.
I think I can hear you say you want everyone in the same canoe.
Yes. So long as it doesn't sink.
We won't let it sink. We will not let this sink. We've gone over time, but it's been a brilliant panel, and I thank you, Secretary. I thank you, Denga, Kevin, and Kimberly. Thank you all for listening to that and for hopefully taking quite a lot of it on board today. I think it's extremely exciting. I'd like you to give the panel a round of applause, please. Thank you.